Welcome to the Chasing Spirituality podcast. I'm your host, Megan, and I'm so excited that you're joining me today. Each episode is full of heartfelt and expansive content that will really help you expand your consciousness and grow as a person. I created this podcast because I wanted to share my own personal experiences on my spiritual journey, but I also wanted to meet others and have them share what they've been through and how they've gotten to where they are today. If you haven't done so already, it would really mean a lot to me if you could rate and review the podcast. This really helps the podcast grow and reach more people, but it also allows me to get more guests on the show. Now on to today's topic.
So I have Katish Haberfield with me, and this is her second time being on the podcast, I guess third, maybe even fourth time if you consider some of our work that we've done together. But as far as her coming on and talking about what she does and her experiences, this will be her second episode, and she's changed a lot since the first time we all heard from her. So I wanted her to come on and just kind of touch base and update us on where she's at now.
Thanks, Megan. It's great to be back. You know, my life has changed so funnily, dramatically, interestingly over the past 2 years that I can't even remember what we talked about on the podcast originally. That's how much what I do is changing, and I love it because it means that I'm learning and growing and interpreting and using those skills. I don't stay stagnant. There's no moss on me. I'm continually changing just like everyone else. And I guess what I would like to give permission to people who are listening, that's just because you train in or you qualify in or you do something in a certain area of your life doesn't mean that you have to stay in that area. You can always learn and grow and apply new skills and move along.
Yes, absolutely. I've changed a lot as well since our last episode. You know, I think when we recorded, you were still mainly focusing on sound bowl journeys and the healing of the physical body.
Yes.
And you were just starting to touch into like the past life stuff when we first recorded.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
And then I wasn't doing any psychic work. I wasn't doing anything with mediumship. I was really just primarily focused on the podcast at that point. So we both have done a lot of shifting in our personal goals, as well as what we offer to the collective. And I think that, you know, it's really important to see those changes and to see that growth, because it shows that we are following, you know, our intuition. We're following the guidance from our spirit team, even though sometimes that is scary because we're having to completely shift our attitude and what we're doing. But it's proof to people out there, like you said, that it's okay. Like, just, it doesn't matter what you're currently working on or what you're qualified in. It's okay to change and to go a new route, change directions, if that's what you're feeling called to do.
Absolutely. Just throw yourself in. Not let the fear of the unknown guide you, but more just following and trusting your intuition. Yes, it is very interesting to see, because also when you heal yourself, you heal others, or you give permission for others to heal themselves or to step into the unknown as well. So and when we have groups of people that work together as clients and as friends, it's magnetic, in terms of you just draw everyone else into your own healing and they heal themselves. So it's like an ignition. You give a permission for the spark to light in somebody else. But yes, spirit releasement therapy is my favorite thing to do, and I couldn't do that without the knowledge of past life or spiritual regression therapy. So my last session was 100% spirit releasement therapy that I did on Friday with a private client. And I have a whole season on the podcast coming up, the Infinite Life podcast, which is all about spirit releasement therapy. So, and their client case study. So it's exciting because it's not something that is talked about a whole lot, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
So what would you like to know?
I'm sure that we'll definitely touch on past lives and other things that you have done a lot of work in and you've educated yourself in. But specifically, I definitely want to talk about spirits and the work that you do with spirits, the work that you do with clients on working with their own soul and their own spirit releasement. And that's really the main focus for today's episode, although I know the past life stuff will come up, because like you said, they're just so linked and they go they're part of each other as far as our own healing mm-hmm. goes. And so I guess, can you start by telling us what made you want to, or what enlightened you that this was going to be part of your next journey, is working with spirits and finding out more about the soul, as far as why do some spirits cross over? Why do some don't? Why do some need assistance? How did you really first start getting pulled in that direction?
Personal experience. I think anybody that becomes a spirit releasement practitioner is pulled into that area because they need spirit releasement for themselves. And the reason for that is that something in their life is not adding up. For me, it was, I delved into past lives to try and understand limiting beliefs and blocks that I was experiencing in my life. And the moment that I started exploring past lives, I discovered that I had a attachment. And this was intricately involved in past lives. It's inescapable. The two sets of work you have to be able to understand both is because I was born with one of my avatars, my past life selves, came in and attached to me at birth. So what that means is, and that sounds very strange and weird, but if part of your soul does not return to the afterlife at the time of death, so if when we die as a human being, we go to the light, or whatever you want to call it. Let's just use the light, the term that is non-religion, religious space. So we go to the light. And if you are afraid of what the light is, if you're afraid of retribution, or you believe in a personal punishment system or a karmic system or a system where there is a heaven and a hell, where there is a purgatory, or if you received a great fright at the time of death, or you wish to stay behind because you're mad, you're angry, you're sad, you felt guilt, remorse, or shame, it's a lot of things there that I just said, then you may choose, because you have human free will, not to go to the light. You may choose to allow your thoughts and your emotions to hold you back. They hold you down. And so what happens is that portion of your soul doesn't go to the light. If you want to think of it like, there's two analogies here. In Monopoly, you have the circle and you put your pie pieces in, right? Each pie piece is a different incarnation. And so the soul exists, whether or not the pieces of the pie are all back in the afterlife. It doesn't need all pieces of the pie to be in the afterlife. But what happens when one piece of the pie doesn't come back is that it stays in the astral realms, waiting to be crossed over until it's ready, until its human free will says, okay, I see the light now, I want to go, or until it finds some way to move back into real life, which is when attachments occur. So they can, a soul that has not crossed over, so a spirit that has not crossed over, a human being that has not crossed over, can attach to another person walking past, an animal, or because the soul, pieces of the soul recognize other pieces of the soul, they can attach back to themselves. So let's call this person Gertrude. Gertrude decided not to go to the light. Marianne comes down to do the next incarnation, and Gertrude goes, hey, there's me. I'm going to go and relive my life again and attach to me. And what Gertrude doesn't understand is that she's actually draining the life force of her newly incarnated self and doing a great disservice. So for me, as I was born, a previous life attached to me. And we, because it was from the time of birth, I knew nothing else. And we interacted symbiotically, like twins, like conjoined twins. And I had no idea, so I'll call him Raymond. That was his name. I had no idea Raymond existed until I started noticing physical changes in my appearance. I noticed patterns of wanting certain hairstyles, despite the fact that they did not suit me over my entire life, or me influencing my mother to get my hair cut a certain way. I noticed distinct two sort of a light personality and an unhappy personality. So I could quite quickly switch into negative state of mind, but I knew that that wasn't me. So at university, one of my nicknames was Eeyore because I always saw the negative side, and I didn't see myself as a negative person at all. I always thought myself as a very resilient, very positive, very go-getting person, but there was a shadow or an aspect of my personality that was down and could be sad or angry or negative-minded. And it wasn't until I actually won a session with a quantum healer, and she identified the past life, as she called it, possession, and the symbiotic fact that we were both in one incarnation. So that's a pretty darn rare occurrence. Most people don't have that, but that's how I got into it. And so I have been exploring avenues to remove that past life persona back into the life. And in my experiences of doing so, I had to understand, I guess, the difference between spirit releasement therapy and exorcism. And I had three very interesting experiences with exorcism, which I think people have a basic understanding about from the church-related dogma, which is the driving out of a spirit, which is classified as a evil spirit or a negative spirit. My first attempt was unsuccessful. My second attempt was successful. But the experience with that made me want to know the story of Raymond. And I dealt with a lot of grief with losing Raymond, because it was half of who I was in my identity, and I had to relearn how to be Katish. It took me at least a good 6 months to sort of deal with that and say, okay, what's next? Who am I? How do I feel? How do I think? You know, what do I believe? And a good year after that, I think, pretty close to it, to be ready to learn Raymond's experience so that I could then understand who he really was, in comparison to how he presented himself to the people who did the spirit exorcism, and what my personal perspective on the whole situation was and what lessons that I could learn from that. So in experiencing that, I then went and studied spirit releasement therapy because of doing past life regression therapy. I really enjoyed understanding the soul's trajectory over time, understanding the stories of each of our avatars or past life selves, concurrent life selves. And I really wanted to know what Raymond's story was, because I felt like it was incomplete, and I felt some kind of a injustice and slight rage about not knowing that. But in hindsight, knowing that Raymond wasn't cooperative and wanting to tell his story at the time, so it probably would have been impossible unless I had gone to a spirit releasement therapy practitioner, which I didn't know existed at that time, to get Raymond's story. That was the only way he was going to go, was by force. But having felt that and then understood the aftermath of that and my own personal need and desire to understand how it integrated within all the other lifetimes that my soul has experienced, and my sheer curiosity meant that I then said, okay, I know I need to know Raymond's story. I don't feel complete unless I know Raymond's story. I need to understand why he felt such injustice and rage at his own life, and then how that affects me. So then, yeah, I did past life regression to go back into Raymond's story and find out the truth about Raymond. So that's how I got into it, long way around. A lot of people get into it much more simply, but if you want to become a practitioner, generally there's got to be a deep-seated, huge example that compels you, just like somebody who grows up become a doctor because they experience some kind of an illness as a child or something like that. You know, there's a really pivotal experience that you experience that says, I want to do this for somebody else because I know the benefit that it has for myself, rather than, oh, that was interesting. Okay, now I never have to do that again. Bye. It's a real deep-seated life-changing experience, you know. You know who you were before and you know who you were after, and you want to help people to feel that difference. Yeah. Long answer.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing. You know, so many questions popped up just from me sharing that. So I'm going to hope that I don't forget all of them. I've jotted some of them down. But the first thing that I wanted to ask is, I know you said that this experience that you had was more of a rare occurrence with attachment at birth. But you also mentioned that you noticed almost like you had split personalities, and it was almost like this other personality at times tried to take over. Is that common with spirit attachment, or someone Absolutely. Who had a spirit attachment?
A spirit attachment is coexisting in the same space as you. And so therefore you cannot distinguish their thoughts from your own thoughts. And the longer that they stay attached to you, the longer they meld in together. So not only are you hosting two energy forms, so you're draining your own life force energy, but you are hosting two sets of thoughts. And it is well documented that spirit attachments can influence your preferences, from sexual preferences, food preferences, career preferences. They can influence your opinions on people and can influence what you do on a day-to-day basis, because depending upon who's the stronger personality will depend upon who's driving at the wheel. Pretty much. So yes, it's one of the key indicators is once you release that spirit, that being, you'll have a lot more quiet inside your mind. It's like, for me, the difference is I can now clearly distinguish between myself when my ego talks, or the current Katish personality talks, and when my higher self talks. And now I can also hear when there are other entities around me. So I can hear the voices of other earthbound spirits who are trying to get my attention. So my clairaudience just went poof, because I could distinguish the subtle nuances in my hearing. Yeah, and it just became a whole lot quieter. It became like, I didn't realize, I think a lot. And basically for me, it just meant that there was that more like that resting meditative state as part of my normal day, normal everyday experience. And it was a level of silence that I hadn't experienced before. That was lovely.
Yeah. So do you believe, or what are your thoughts on spirits that decide to attach to someone? Do you think that they know that they're actually hurting the human, or do you think that a lot of times they don't realize that they're actually draining their energy, that they just know that they needed to become grounded and they needed to attach to something? What are your thoughts on that?
They definitely don't know. There's two main categories of why a spirit will attach to you. One is your safety for them. There's something about you and your aura that reminds them either of themselves or somebody that they loved in their lifetime. So when I had a few attachments from going to cemeteries and crossing people over, for example, I've been told, and you've got experience with this, Megan, is that I had a very motherly energy. And so small children will always try to attach to me that are small children ghosts, because I have this safe motherly energy. The second reason that so those children or those spirits that see you as safety are absolutely not trying to hurt you. They just like your energy. They want to be with you. They know that you will protect them. They're afraid of dark energy that resides in the astral realms. And you're the bright light for them. The second type is the spirits that don't cross over that are your family members, either from this incarnation or any other incarnation, or even pets. And the reason that they attach to you is, generally speaking, apart from their fear, they have a level of guilt or remorse about what they did to you in your lifetime or what they didn't do or say to you in their lifetime. So they feel a responsibility towards you and they want to protect you. So they think that they are attaching to protect you and watch out for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And that definitely resonates with some of my own personal experiences dealing with earthbound spirits and kind of what I've learned from them as far as helping them cross over and just communicating with them. A lot of the times, even the ones that feel scary, that may come through with a lot of heavy, difficult emotions like grief or anger, a lot of times that can feel alarming to us in our human body, but most of the time they don't mean harm. They're not trying to scare you. It's just that's so overwhelmingly powerful for them that that's all they can feel. And it's one of those things that they can't find a way to ground and process what's really happening is kind of how it has come through for me a lot.
The only time where they mean harm is, and I've had one private client where this is the case so far, is where they do it as a revenge tactic.
Mm.
And this is because at the time that they die, generally speaking, they're in a very negative state of mind. They may be in a war zone, a battle zone, something where you are on opposing sides, or somebody is in opposing sides. And just like a grandmother can attach to her newborn baby or a great-grandmother, somebody who's in a battle may follow the direct line, the silver thread between people, and go and attach to their children as a revenge. Now, that person has to be in a very negative state to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said, it's more of the rarity of the situations that I've come across so far. They are considered to me to be, you know, really dark negative energy. But when you talk them through the process, because spirit releasement therapy is talking to these beings, hearing their story and showing them that they are composed of light, not dark. Hearing all their fears and all the myths that they were told whilst in the astral realms or before they died, pulling that apart and getting them to see the truth. And then it's kind of like you find the teddy bear inside, or you find mm-hmm. the gooey center. And then you take them back into their past life to that moment where they attach to the client. And you take them up to the light when they were willing to cross over, and then they can tell you, because they can do that life review. They can say, oh, this is what happened. This was my perspective. This is what I see now and I realize now. And it's actually really, really quite powerful to hear somebody who you would consider as having done that as a negative thing, as a revenge-based thing, as a dark force being a really heavy, negative, dark energy thing, to use the released mind to see the balanced situation and what they have learned. And generally speaking, they get great insight into how sometimes we do things for the right reason that other people will see as the wrong reason. And that, you know, judgment, you can judge yourself even in the act of attaching, but the higher perspective sees that, yes, you did it with this intention, but at that time, that perspective was created that way because of the situation that you're in, and therefore for your soul that was on the path for you. So one of the difficult things I think to learn as a human being is there is no such thing as right and wrong. There mm-hmm. actually is no such thing as, it's really difficult to understand that one. What do you mean there's no such thing? All of our value systems are changing and all of our moral judgments change according to your perspective. And working with spirits, you learn very quickly that each person in the world has a different perspective. And what you think is wrong or immoral may not be wrong or immoral when you look from their perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Which is not justifying anything. It's just saying that there is no such thing. There's no black and white. Mm-hmm. And I would have to say that previously, before doing this kind of work, I was a very black and white kind of a person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's definitely a really strong message. And I think that me and you both doing our work together, and Katisha is actually doing a lot of work on her own to create some beautiful content that we talked about. We talked to different spirits, you know, together, and we learned a lot that even though they were earthbound, that was part of their experience, you know, like they needed to have that experience and learn certain lessons. That's what their soul needed. And it does, like you said, it doesn't mean that it was right or wrong. It's what they needed as a soul. And I believe that everything that we experience, whether we label it as good or bad, it's part of our journey. It is part of our experience, and it makes us who we are because we have certain lessons and certain things that we need to know, that we need to go through. And you can definitely see that really strongly in the work that you do, working very closely with these spirits.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So the next question, and this is a question that I've personally been curious about, and so maybe you don't know, but I want to at least ask the question to see if you have any ideas or theories, or maybe your spirit team has answered this question for you. But so we all have free will as human beings, and when we die, so how is it possible for a spirit to attach to us if it is against our free will?
So there is this really fine gray line where you can have implied consent by belief systems that you hold at the superconscious level, which may have been in a past life. You may have said, I will always be of assistance to those in need, or whatever it is. And they can see, hear, know, and feel that stream of consciousness, which gives them permission. They are going against your free will, but it's not until you actually go back to the moment in time that you can see what things you did that made you more open to spirits saying, oh, these activities show me that she is open to this kind of experience. The darker the energy, so the spirit that has been around for longer in the astral realms, who's experienced violence, is around demons and negative lower astral beings, the less that they have any regard for your free will. They will totally and utterly disrespect and disregard that free will. So it depends upon the energy, the vibration of the being that is in the astral realms that is willing to attach to you. There are certain things that we do that make it more open for attachments. So, for example, if you have attachments on you right now, it's like, well, she's got a train full of people, I'll just hop on, right? It's implied. If you drink alcohol, I'm sorry, this is somebody who trained in the wine industry at a university level on how to grow grapes and market wine and make wine. Anytime you are in a reduced state of conscious being, so if you are drunk, if you are taking psychedelics of any sort, any mind-altering substance, and I've read recently that this could possibly even include other things like, and I'm really not sure about this one, I still have to do my own research, coffee, when, you know, changing your state of alertness.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely any psychedelics, drugs, alcohol. When you are allowing yourself to go into a state where you are not 100% in full conscious control, it means that you've let your guard down, right? When you are in hospital under anesthetic, you have no conscious control. You are operating in the realm of the subconscious mind. Lots of people get spirits attached in hospital. So it really, you can say all you like at the conscious level, I do not agree. But it's a bit like you can say all you like, I would like to be a millionaire, but your super conscious mind might go, mm-mm. I have had cases where, so the original soul thought is, I'm a general, I'm dying in a battle, and I've just caused all of my soldiers to die, so therefore I make some kind of a vow that says, forevermore, I will help every single being.
Mm-hmm.
That's that. It's that belief that is encoded in kind of like your blueprint.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it does depend upon what you're doing, what your belief systems are, whether you've already got others there, and then how you use boundaries in real life. Are you really firm with boundaries in your conscious world? Do you push them out and let them? Are you really
mm-hmm.
part of this exercise with me now? I was learning really strong boundaries, because then that translates into your sub and super conscious mind. And then, yeah, how much you relish and enjoy the experience of not being in control. And, you know, a very large proportion of this world, no judgment, it's just the way we've all grown up, is told to relax with alcohol, told to relax with drugs, told to use substances from pharmacies that change our experience of consciousness, just to have a break for a little while. Also, it depends upon your personal hygiene in terms of cleansing your spaces and managing your aura, which is kind of stuff that I'm only just getting into understanding, but I do understand, for example, the benefits of ocean bathing. I went to the ocean twice this weekend after doing my own personal work and client work. You know, the salt showers are really important, but it's a bit like, you know, flossing your teeth isn't going to make a whole lot of difference if you've got a root canal issue.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me. So when you actually work with clients to do spirit releasement, is that something that you also do? Do you connect to the subconscious mind to find out where they have certain beliefs that allow certain attachments?
Absolutely. It's integral to the process. So we do a body scan, and that identifies where in the body this spirit is residing. And then we talk to the spirit and find out their story, where it's willing. And then we take that spirit in a full proper session back in time to the moment of attachment to find out why they attached, and to release them back into the light so that we know that they cross over. Sometimes I do it with just the angels and ask the angels to cross them over. But generally speaking, if I do that, then I've got to take the client back into the past life so that they can get that perspective themselves to see what it was that was happening at that period in time. But there's always something that's going on that needs to be resolved, both in the spirit's perspective and the host, the client's perspective. So these things don't, it's not a one and done session, because where there's one, there's two, there's three, there's four, there's five. And where there's, so for example, you could have a spirit attached to your grandma, and grandma may have her grandma. You know, you can have whole family trees attached. And one of those people may have also a device and a DFE attached to them, a dark force entity. And it's not something that you can do in a day or a week. That, and that's why I've changed my sessions now to, you have to have five sessions with me. One session is a big debrief to start with, and then four, a month of sessions, because you need time for your body to adjust.
Mm-hmm.
As you remove a spirit, your vulnerability is down, and anything that's nearby can come rushing in. We need to refill you with light precisely at the right moment. I have a recording which of Max yesterday when I was in a deep hypnotic state, and I was doing, we were tracing back Raymond's origin. So what happened to Raymond, and then taking it back twice more to a little boy who was, my understanding, a 7-year-old who was of pygmy origination. in Africa, which is the past life.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. No, three times backwards. And you have to be very careful because we can believe very much in our spirit guides, but they can be, here we go, second element, false spirit guides.
Mm-hmm.
And so in my own personal session yesterday, we were following the route back to check that we had got everything. And, you know, it's a hygiene thing, you know, obviously when you work in the area, you've got to continually cleanse and hygiene, keep the hygiene, spiritual hygiene up so that you are absolutely sure that there's nothing there for your own self. And I was in deep hypnosis, and at the moment that we crossed over the little boy, who was the me of the other time, who called himself like Casper the Friendly Ghost,
mm-hmm.
Who is the reason that I'm like a light to everybody in the astral realms, because he's there, he's been there, stuck, decided he didn't want to cross over, and he just grabs people. At the moment that he was crossing over to the light, whoosh, I got an image of a spirit guide trying to do a healing for me. And I, before I even said the words, throw the salt on them to check if they were a real spirit guide. How you tell if a spirit guide is real or not is if they're a real spirit guide, they don't care if you throw salt at them, right? They're like, yeah, bring it on. Throw salt at them in your mind. If they dissolve, they're a negative entity pretending to be your spirit guide. They can pretend to such precise levels that they look the same, sound the same, and feel the same. So I was about to say throw the salt on to my practitioner, and my cat, Max, suddenly jumped up onto the table, and then just smacked at my face with his paw, which took me straight out of the hypnosis. But he was stopping me from being attacked by this false spirit guide who I thought I was then going to healing for. And that was a huge shock, because it's like I'm learning the lessons so that I can teach people at the moment about these false spirit guides that appear so real but aren't. And Mac could see, because cats can see the astral realm, Max could see very clearly that this entity was coming towards me while I was in the thick of the releasement. And he just whacked my face so that I moved, so that that shocked me out of it, so that the entity couldn't attach. I never thought that could happen before that session. So now I'm really, really aware about how fast it's, how imperative it is that you fill and seal with light exactly at the time that you're moving.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a void. Where there's a void, energy wants to be replaced. And so you have to be very, very careful with that, which is why after my sessions, I always send all my clients a series of 5 recordings that they are to listen to. One is to meet their spirit guide, to do a body scan to check. One is to talk to any earthbound spirits that the spirit guides has identified. One is for ET, one is for DFE, and the 5th is a seal and healing. And after a spirit releasement session, you have to do seal and healing your energy every single day for a week. And it's critical, because you need that replacing in with the light, with the light energy. I think I've answered your question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you just basically start up a bunch of new questions. So we'll see where that goes now. But can you explain what exactly, from your experience, is a dark force entity?
So as human beings, we decided that we needed to experience contrast. It's how we know what we are and what we are not. Mm-hmm. And a dark force entity is a thought form, because what we think we create, logos, before us. And if you go back to the Bible, and just don't take the religious aspect of this, but in the beginning was the word, and the word was God. So thought is the creation, the word, what we speak, we create. And when we think negative thoughts, we can actually create entities, right? Anytime you hate something out loud, or you know, I wish they would die, I wish they would die, or whatever it is that you say, you think vehemently negative things about a person, you're actually creating an energetic mass. And that energetic mass with collective thought can just grow bigger and bigger and bigger. It's like the opposite. When you do global prayer, you join a prayer circle and you know that somebody recovers after receiving the prayer, or the healing energy goes to a location or whatever. Negative, the reverse of that, can create into physicality, to create into being negative entities, which are not human based. They are created from negative thought forms. They still have an energetic feeling, but they're not human. So that's you know, what one form of dark force entity is. You look at any religion, especially Buddhism, goes right into the different levels of the kinds of beings, like hungry ghosts that are in the astral realms, the lower astral realms. If you have a look in the Bible, it talks about the different kinds of demonic and lower astral realm beings as well. They are created from the notion of Satan, Lucifer, which is a creation by humanity to experience fear, to control. So then there are human beings who have died, who have gone into the astral realms, where there are all of this potential negative thought forms, people who are confused, and they get afraid. And so they can be influenced by the demonic beings, the lower astral realm beings, to come onto their side. The best way to experience this is kind of like if anyone watched the recent Amazon Lord of the Rings, when it went backwards in the new series, you know how you see the elves that and the Middle Earthers who willingly hand themselves over to the being that claimed to be Sauron. You know, they just marched on over because they were like, well, I'm going to join sides with this force because it seems more powerful and I'm afraid of them and I would rather be on their good side than their bad side. So when you're floating around in the astral realm, you're confused, you're sad, you feel all the emotions of the time when you died because you haven't received healing, you haven't gone to the light, you haven't been embraced by the light. And so if you're surrounded by negative energy, then you're a sponge to that. And you can have a perfectly normal human being who's very stubborn and does not want to cross over to the light because they're sure that they're going to go to purgatory or go to hell because they forgot to say the Hail Marys, or they didn't go to church, or they went to the wrong kind of church, or whatever it was. We'll get influenced by the energy in the state that is there, the lower astral realms. And so they identify falsely as being a negative being. And the longer that they identify falsely as being a negative being, it's kind of like they put on a suit of dark armor. You know, they're light. All human beings and all beings are light at their core. Why? Because we all come from source. You want to call it God or whatever you want to call it. God is pure energy, pure love. There is nothing other than love. But we all have free will. We all have our own perspective. And so if you can see only, hear only, and be only around negative beings of any kind, that becomes your normal, right? And so you identify that. And that's why with spirit releasement therapy, if they're unwilling to identify with the inner light, the core, then we call in the rescue spirits, the rescue warriors of light, and they just kind of do like a what exorcists do, surround them in a net of healing light and send them back to source for healing. But if you're able to chip through the armor, so to speak, of the human being, in my experience, if you can be patient enough and talk long enough with them, if they can feel your resonance, your energy, your compassion, then they will be able to disarm themselves and willingly want to go to the light. So I think that covers the main categories. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And when you were speaking, I received this vision of having like a crystal or a rock, and that's our light. And imagine that crystal being thrown around in some dirt or rolling down a hill and of snow and being packed. All of this darkness is now on top of the layer of light, and they start to identify with it because it becomes heavy, and it just builds and builds and builds and builds. And from my understanding, is the longer the spirit is in the astral realm, the more confused and harder it can be, not always, but the harder it can be to guide them back to the light, because it just keeps getting caked on with all this mud and dirt.
And because the negative energy beings that exist in that realm, who are the hardcore negative energy beings, will tell them deceptions of it's called the three deceptions. You know, they tell them that the light will burn them and harm them. That they basically give them mistruths. And because of the fear-based energy around these mistruths, if you've only got negative energy around you, you don't have a benchmark of pure energy to contrast that with. So therefore, you believe these false truths. And the angels will not come rescue you from the astral realms if you don't cross over, because you have free will. Somebody has to ask on your behalf, which is where the power of prayer. And I find it so strange now that I tell people to pray, because I've never been a prayer. But the power of prayer to ask angels, an angel of transition, when you have a loved one who dies, it's really important to tell them you need to look for the light when you die and go towards the light. Because people don't know what to do when they die. We don't talk about it. So they just die, and they're like, if they don't have it set in concrete in their mind, whatever they perceive is going to happen will happen. If that perception is purgatory or so-called created hell, that's what they'll experience because of the power of thought. But if they know to and perceive that there is going to be light there, and to look out for whatever is in their vernacular, be it an angel, be it a dove, be it a rainbow bridge, whatever it is, a helping spirit of some kind, look for family members, they will be focused intently on that and be able to go to the light. But you as a person can also pray for them, to pray that an angel of transition be assigned to them immediately upon death, so that they can see the light. It's kind of like, it's death hygiene, prepping your family members so that there is no doubt for them that they need to look for the light, so that they can cross over, so that they don't enter the astral realms. But again, you can't force them to. Their own subconscious mind and their own basically the state of mind that you have at the time of death, based on your beliefs of death, is what you're going to experience. Mm-hmm. So if you experience hell and damnation, fire and purgatory, that's what you're going to experience, because you've created it from your thought forms. That's what you expected. I can't tell you the number of earthbound spirits, the very first word that they say to me is cursed and purgatory, because they believe they're in purgatory. And I'm like, I have to tell them, well, you're in a state that you have called purgatory, because you've created into being, because you didn't believe in the light to cross over to, or you were too shocked at the time of your death to cross over. What you've created is worse than what really exists. The light is what exists. The light is where you're supposed to go to. And what you're in, the lower astral realms, exists because all beings everywhere have embraced fear. If we didn't embrace fear, there would be no such thing. But in order for that to exist, we've got to release all the beings that are in the astral realms, and also re-educate all beings everywhere about the light. So, yeah, it's just part of being in existence, I guess.
Yeah, I can definitely see how all of that plays out. So you mentioned that the astral realm can appear like a purgatory or different depending upon the belief systems that the person had when they passed. So are there any common themes to what earthbound spirits are experiencing before they cross over? Are there any is there anything that's common among that experience between them that you've noticed in your work?
Well, death is as individual as individuals, right? So, look, I've had nuns not cross over, which is just like, to me, I'm sorry. You didn't believe in the light? No, they believed in their sins and being judged for their sins. There's plenty of people who are tragically involved in accidents or murders or heart attacks. I have lots of heart, I live opposite a hospital, so lots of heart attack, stroke victims that vehemently believe it was not their time to die. So they're clinging to the earth experience. And when you believe the belief that you are robbed of life, if you don't believe in the perfect timing of your death, if you don't believe in the fact that there is no such thing as death, that you're just transitioning to another experience, it's like weights around your ankles. It holds you down. And so anything that can hold you down, shock, trauma, the way that you die, if you can't see it at the time of death as simply an exit point, then that will hold you back. So, it, you know, people can die from all sorts of reasons. I have a lot of people institutionalized. So the first thing they'll say is, I'm in an institution. I'm chained in chains, or like a mental institution or an asylum, I was murdered. I'm on a ship still. Sorry, I'm thinking. I just died in the hospital. Getting a lot of satanic rituals. Or I participated in a seance that went wrong. As many potentials of there are of ways to die, there are that exist. Why people didn't cross over. So I think that as long as people believe that death is the end, or death is the tragedy, or death is something that is going to be taking your life away from you, rather than an exit point to a new experience, there will be as many opportunities for you to be feeling wrong done by your death rather than excited for your death. If you can pivot to realizing that there are in existence a billion things that you could do in this lifetime, right? And there are a billion different exit points. Your soul may have mapped out 1, 2, 3, 5 key potential optimal exit points. But they're all exit points. They're kind of like a choose your own adventure novel from when you were a kid. Every exit point teaches you, your soul, a different lesson. And none of them, no matter how traumatic that exit point, and this is the really difficult pill to swallow, so to speak, none of the ways that you die is wrong, because you don't die. They're just a transition point. It's just meant to be seamless. It's like, I could catch this train to go to that destination, or this train to go to that destination. Oh, whoops, that train looks really interesting. I might just go there, or I jumped on the wrong train track at the wrong, I went to the wrong platform. Okay, so this exit point is going to happen. I'm going to go on this journey, but it's me grasping to the fact that I should have exited in 20 years' time. I should have died peacefully in my sleep. I should not have died on the operating table. It's the clinging to the shoulds of your expectation of your exit point that causes the trauma. So you have to do the inner work to realize that there is no such thing as death, that you're just swapping suits, and that it's all a choose your own adventure. We have to culturally change this mindset about the sorrow of death, to see it as a celebration that no matter what exit point you took, it's great. You've done the work that you came here to do. If you are 2, 22, 102, or 72, it's okay. You weren't harmed. You can't be harmed. You're a spiritual being. It's when we cling on to the fact that we're a physical being that we allow ourselves to be hurt.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that, again, that's a long answer, but I hope that I know. And all of these answer more questions, and the create more questions. And the thing is, this is deeply personal work that you have to work through, and you may have a violent reaction. She's speaking a load of shit. You know what I mean? And that's okay, because there are many things that I've heard that I've gone, what a load of crock. And then I've investigated. Then 5 years down the road, I've gone, actually, there's something in there that rings a bell of truth. And you have to unpack it to you. And you will or will not agree with anything that I've said according to your perception and your beliefs and your experiences. And neither of us is right or wrong.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I say that a lot on this podcast, that, you know, if I ever say something that doesn't resonate with you, then just leave it, you know, like, it doesn't have to. Wherever you're at on your journey is where you're supposed to be. And who knows, you, like you said, a year from now, 5 years from now, you may feel differently. And I can attest to that on my own personal journey. You know, I have changed certain beliefs that I've had, certain beliefs that I've held. I've even gone back to old beliefs that I thought I didn't believe anymore and readopted those. And so, you know, if anything that we've said in this episode or in any of my other episodes, that if it doesn't resonate, that's fine. You know, this is, we're talking from our experience and from what we've learned and gained from our own guides and just what we've experienced through our own journey. And,
I think the powerful thing is just simply to ask you why it doesn't resonate.
Mm-hmm.
Because then you'll find your truth, and it's in understanding whether your truth is a truth is based on perception. And so, again, it's just checking your perception and seeing how much you want to hold on to that perception, how much it's important to you, and can you consider different aspects. And yeah, maybe this is not the lifetime that what I'm saying is going to resonate. Maybe it's a different lifetime. Maybe this is the jumping point for another lifetime where you'll come back and you might be choosing to experience a lifetime where you absolutely want to convince the world that there is purgatory and damnation and hell.
Yeah,
it's all curious learnings, and that's what we're not learning, but they're all just different experiences to know who you are and who you aren't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you'll never get to your personal truth until you start questioning your own beliefs and the things that don't resonate with you. You know, like you said, ask yourself, what about this is triggering me? What about this doesn't feel right? And just going deeper into that. And, you know, that's how you discover what your true beliefs are and what really resonates for you. Because up until a certain point, we're usually just the beliefs that we've adopted throughout our lifetime from parents and from their parents and from society. And so until we start questioning all of those things, we won't be really clear on where we stand and what resonates with us on a soul level. And so, yeah, I definitely agree with that. Going within and asking those questions.
So I am ending our conversation here. However, Katish and I do talk for an additional almost 40 minutes. But if you want to catch the rest of this episode, you're going to have to join the Chasing Spirituality community. So Katish and I go a little bit deeper into connecting with earthbound spirits and what you should do if you're ever approached by an earthbound spirit that needs help transitioning to the light and crossing over. She shares some of her personal practices and techniques and prayers that you can use to help these souls reintegrate with the oversoul. I also talk about some of my own personal experiences and things that I have experienced when working with earthbound spirits. We also go deeper into the spirit releasement attachment therapy that Katish offers. She talks about how You know, if you have a spirit attachment and what you should do about that, some common signs and symptoms, and how she works with people to release those attachments. So if you're interested in hearing the rest of this juicy conversation, join the Chasing Spirituality community. I have the link to that in the description of this episode. The community is a safe place for you to expand spiritually and really grow your intuition and gifts. We do practice circles, and there's moon and astrology forecasts, and just lots of really fun and creative content out there. So check that out. Make sure that if you really resonated with Katish and her work, you check out her website. You can visit katish.com, learn more about her, learn more about the offerings that she has, and how you can really work with her and book appointments with her for past life regression, as well as spirit attachment releasement therapy. Also, check out her podcast, The Infinite Life. I have been on her podcast several times. I've done my own personal past life regressions with her. And then the current season that she's producing is a season where we speak to the spirits that she has crossed over. So really, really interesting stuff. So if you enjoyed this episode, you'll definitely enjoy her podcast as well. So make sure that you check that out. And we will see you guys on the next one. Wait, before you go, I want to share how you can receive a free reading with me. Listeners of the podcast, if you go and leave me a review on Apple and then send me that review to chasingspirituality.com, you can get a chance to win a free reading of your choice. This can be psychic or mediumship. Once a month, I will choose one of the listeners to receive the reading. And I won't pull your name out of the drawing until you're chosen. This will help the podcast grow, but will also allow me to give back to my listeners. Hope to hear from you soon. Thank you so much for joining me today. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with someone you love. And it would mean so much to me if you could rate, review, and subscribe so that the podcast can reach and assist more people. Until next time, I'm sending you so much love.